Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Hey, welcome to the Nerdist Podcast, number 164. Couple of quick announcements. I am recording the stand-up comedy special in a couple weeks for Comedy Central, the hour special that I won't fucking shut up about. But I'm actually doing the hour in its entirety for the first time as a practice at Nerd Melt Monday night, which is Meltdown Comics, 7522 Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles at 9:30 p.m. Free show, first come, first serve. I say come by. I don't think it's going to fill up, so you should be fine. I know you're saying, why haven't you done the hour in its entirety before now? Well, because I've been working on a lot of new material that I wanted to put in the special, and so I've only been working on it in modular, like, 15-minute chunks in L.A. pretty much every night for the past month, so now I get to see if it works or if it's crap. If it's crap, I am going to have to hustle. Oh, crappity, self-deprecating, blah, 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 poop. So that's it for that. If you're going to be in Toronto the 10th or 11th of February, I am doing the set again at the Comedy Bar. So I'll be doing four shows over the course of those 2 days. And if you're in New York February 17th, please come out to the taping of the stand-up special. I think that there's like 800 seats to fill or so. So you will probably get tickets if you want them. So for information on all of those shows and links to all of those tickets, go to nerdist.com/calendar and then click on the appropriate link. So that's enough for those announcements. Now this episode. All right, about a week and a half ago, comedian Fred Stoller went on Mark Maron's WTF and dropped a gauntlet on the Nerdist podcast. And I got all these tweets from people that are like, what the fuck did you do to Fred Stoller, man? He's mad. And then when we heard it, we were like, this is not bad. Everything he said is really not that bad. You know, he doesn't know us. It's fine for him to challenge whether or not we're nerds. And he didn't even really, whatever. It was just the internet trying to start shit. But anyway, we had Fred on to address these allegations and to get inside his head and find out what the fuck from his what the fuck appearance. So here it is, the Nerdist Podcast number 164. Fred Stoller. I got my eye on you, Stoller.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
You need a water?
Fred, is there water?
Yeah, I think these waters.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. I've worked on this one.
And then get up on that microphone.
Is this recording? Is this worthy of?
This is happening.
I just worked on Fran Drescher's show, and she gets all these. Should I put this on?
Yeah, if you want to. Yeah.
And she has the water. You're not allowed to drink plastic water in front of her.
Oh,
and the guy's bringing me into the room.
You drinking plastic water over there?
And the guy's bringing me in, and I have it. No, you can't be seen. She's really nice, but I guess with, she has a fun cancer schmancer, and she had cancer. So I guess we're going to get it now. But something,
all right, I can understand
from
that.
The bottles, she thinks?
Something, and so they have all these expensive, like, glasses. It's these kind of... You know, like, what's a carafe
decanter
kind of thing?
Yeah.
And But for some reason, you can't be seen. I don't know why you can't be seen drinking it. She's really, really nice.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah, very nice.
Don't you want to get to a point in your career where you can just have rules, weird rules about things?
Fran Drescher has an interesting career trajectory to me. She's like the first Spinal Tap.
Mm-hmm.
She's in UHF 6 years later. And then all of a sudden,
they've done a bunch of like.
In the Big Picture, too.
Yeah.
Bunch of like Dog Day Afternoon-ish kind of things. Where people are crazy people with hostages. And I remember she did something like that.
Yeah, she was big in the hostage scene.
Right.
Fran Drescher.
She did that joke.
Love that. Sorry. We just found Fred's button. We just found Fred's button.
No, but I just was from there. And yeah. Oh, so this is actually the show without an intro or?
Pretty much.
Yeah, this is pretty much it.
Wow. Well, thank you. I feel, excuse me, pressure. Because I did Marc Maron's show and all these people tweeting, get him, get that bastard. I don't know what I did.
I don't know what happened either. All I know is a couple days ago, I'm running errands and I start seeing all these tweets like, what the fuck did you do to Fred Stoller?
Which I never mentioned his name. I never said anything.
But people directing it at me to begin with. It was the tweet that one guy goes, verbatim tweet. According to Fred Stoller, you're an arrogant prick. Now,
wait, you're a man.
Me? No, you.
It was directed at me.
I've met you twice. Once at a Weird Al Yankovic concert.
Yes,
remember that?
And so I do remember that actually.
Yeah.
And so I called Mark and I left him a message. I go, I don't know what's going on, but like I don't really know Fred Stoller. What happened? So then I call Matt and Matt goes, I listened to it. It's nothing. I don't know what people are freaking out about.
Yeah, first of all, the thing is, someone says something, and you think it's this uproar, and it's just probably one person, and it's like the IMBD. You ever read the comments?
Yes, of course.
And it looks like I hate what they're doing with Penguins of Madagascar, and it's just three people. But three people could ruin someone's career and get them fired because it looks like they don't like King Julian.
It looks like everyone. Yeah. If the scope of your view is pinhole size, but still,
woke up to a Ron Funches tweet and I looked at it and Ron said something to the effect of, you and Fred Stoller have a beef. I expect a retaliation song. And then I was like, I was very confused by it. And I really thought in my head, I had no idea that Fred had been on WTF. And in my head, I thought, maybe Ron just pulled two, comedy people out of nowhere.
Well, I never mentioned your name, but I have all these people go, get Matt Mira back. And
what's so funny about it is that it was almost the kind of thing that makes you go, some people are awful. Because what happened in those people's minds is they perceived a situation in a certain way. They filled in a lot of blanks with their own minds.
Right.
And then just started not only attacking, but also that shitty schoolyard thing of, hey, did you hear what that guy said about you? You gonna let him get away with that?
Right, now I'm a pussy
like,
if I don't like...
What the fuck?
Okay, all right, you want...
But I don't... Listen, you are totally entitled to your... I mean, Matt brought you up about having you on the show a long time ago, and I go, yeah, let's get Fred on, because I know your stand-up from the 80s.
Thank you.
And then for some reason, we just didn't
because
book
it. Was right before we went to Montreal. That's what happened.
Okay.
First of all, yeah, I have irrational abandonment issues. to make a long story short, I knew him.
I've known you for like 5 years.
Okay, he was just like I felt sorry for him, this kind of guy in the ground floor of the Apple Store with a smile and, hey, I'm a comedy nerd.
He's a huge comedy nerd.
And this happens a lot with me where I'm a novelty and they go, hey, I've seen you. And then that novelty wears off, like that schmuck's coming in the Apple Store every day, and like, get away from me, Fred. And so then, I took you to a movie.
You went to Ratatouille together?
I took him to it. Yeah. And he was just this guy. And then all of a sudden, he becomes on the genius floor. And he's the snarky kind of guy. I'm trying to do Twitter, And he goes, well, maybe I'll give you an FF. I've got 7,000 followers. Now it's up to 77,000. And I never got the FF, and I never got a retweet.
And I forgot. I just honestly forgot.
I'm being irrational. So I'd come
Mind
in.
Mind you, Fred at some point unfollowed me, and I never unfollowed Fred.
Wait, no, I'm back. I got wait, how do you guys stop? Well, now I'm back.
What, Fred, what you need to do is tag Matt Myra at Matt Myra and just write unfollow in all caps, and then Matt will retweet that, and then you'll get your retweet.
Well, no. It's I'll tell you my irrational issues. Like, I'd see him, and I feel like I'm the guy begging him, like, you know, the guy like in the movie, what's that movie? The Artist. You know, did you see the movie The Artist?
I haven't seen it yet.
No,
where
I heard
this
there's
guy
no words.
This,
I
this
can't.
Thing, and he helps an extra. She's a star. Now he's homeless. So I felt like, you know, I was nice to him. And then I'm there, and I go, hey, I did a movie. It's a movie festival, so you consider it. And he goes, oh, maybe I'll watch it, Fred. And so
Matt, you know, did you say that to him? Maybe I'll watch it.
No, you did say it, but I never heard anything.
Yeah, you never heard anything, because here's exactly what happened, and I felt bad about it.
Oh, no, this is
what
happened.
We should get Judge John Hodgman here.
You guys would go to Montreal.
I go,
could you please, you know, we're trying to do
things. And that's when I mentioned it to Hardy.
Okay, all right. No, I'm saying I... So then I had this irrational, I'm using the word irrational a lot. I see his tweets, hey, making fun of hipsters. And I'm thinking, Matt, you became a hipster. When you make hipster jokes, you're the hipster. And you became this, if he was a comedian in the 80s, he'd be this chubby guy and kind of self. But then they're the coolest people in the world, because it's like, I hate Best Week Ever. And I know it's off the air, but like, hey, you're a loser.
It.
Hey, let's make fun of The View. And they're so hip and they make snarky faces. So I had this, again, this thing, I thought he became that, like, hey, you know what the hipster is? Two lattes and this. So I thought I'm the loser middle-aged guy. Then I see you at the that chicken, the beef place with the beautiful girlfriend, because you're the, and it all relates to you, Chris.
Okay, sure.
Because, like, again, and I bought your book, and
he did, he bought your book.
I bought your book, and... So this is a problem with the IMBD now I'm having with you.
No, I totally understand. And, you know, to be fair... Matt did get less tolerant of people when he worked at the Genius Bar, because he was working 10 hours a day.
And not only that.
In the Grove, which is just a magnet for the...
But this happens to me a lot, where people think I'm a novelty. There's that guy, and then they see the schmuck walks around every day. I have no life. And
you have the life. You get to walk around every day.
You know, yeah. To be fair to Matt, Matt has two bad things going for him. For him. No, a comedian and a tech guy, because, you know, as a comedian on the plane, you don't want to say what you do, because they'll tell you jokes or give you Seinfeld premises when I worked on it. So not only does he's like a doctor, where you get retards like me going, how do I do this? And again, all the people at the Apple store, like, just shake their head when I come in, and because I don't know anything, you know. So no, I'm glad I have it. There's a woman on Twitter where... She's mean as a Twitter lady, but then when you see her in person, so you get this kind of, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the issue.
That's
about
interesting.
You.
Yeah, no, that's the issue. But wait, it's my turn. My turn.
No. Oh, I don't want to interrupt.
No. I don't have any issue at all.
That was
phenomenal. I thought it.
No. What were you going to say about Twitter when you know them as the Twitter person?
Oh,
and
well,
they're nice.
Yeah, I mean, you know what's weird is that, you know, I'm not someone whose like public persona is different from my. Like, if you,
nor do I think I am.
Well, I'm pretty much like
I had
pretty
the
much how I am.
That Matt became the Best Week Ever snarky kind of, hey dude, we're nerds, and he's now the coolest guy. That's see, now I feel weird with you, because I'm versed, and so I don't want to be the IMBD. I don't want to rehash stuff you get, because I'll ask a question about Breaking Bad and I have to apologize. Go, I'm sorry if this has been brought up, because I'll ask a question. You asshole, three. Threads ago, like I have to go back,
right?
You know, like why with the super
well, that's
lab?
Just, that's just people know. Just wanting to. I mean, again, you know, the internet is a playground where people love to start shit.
Yes.
They love to empower themselves by telling you that you're stupid. I mean, like it's all of those things. And you know, I didn't hear the Marin podcast. Matt
listened
to it, and Matt said, you know, whatever you said was not a big deal at all.
No.
And so I texted Marin back later, and I go. All right, I heard what it was. This was not a big deal. Sorry to bother you. It's just the internet trying to start shit.
The only thing is, like I said, I've been abandoned. Like there was a movie director, Freddie, you're going to be in everything I do. You're my lucky charm. Cut to I'm in nothing he does. So you have that, but I'm glad.
Director or dad?
Director.
Okay.
I'm glad he. I had this thing like Mark remembers me when he texted me back, because I did reach out. I thought he's one of these guys with 7,000 followers. Doesn't. No, but you know, even you, when you see nerd, this is, I wrote on Seinfeld, and we have this thing, it's an impenetrable fortress, and some schmucky comic from the Midwest was faxing in back in 94, you stole my Demi joke. And so they use it. So Larry's going, I've done, you know, 10 years with original stuff. Do I have to steal from comics in the Midwest? And so he was like, Larry was fuming about this. Then text the guy, whatever they did back then. Faxed him back saying, we didn't steal your joke. It's different. What?
A fax thread.
Yeah, it's like exactly. Remember those? And then the guy, it's like your thing in the book where the guy's hating you, then when you respond, he feels bad, you know, and you don't remember your own book.
I do remember that. That was when they told me that a guy told me I was an asshole for replacing the soup with my show, which I respected the fact that he thought I had that much power.
Yeah. Well,
right.
And fairness to him.
So then the guy responds to Larry, goes, okay, I'm stopping my boycott. I will watch Seinfeld. Thank you. And Larry, you know, was so relieved that, you know.
The guy just wanted to be heard.
So again, okay, so now now you've heard it before. My issue, because I'll get yelled at, they go, get those nerds, you're not real nerds. It's almost like we're rappers, like, you're not from the streets, you know.
Yeah.
You know, nerd is like Eddie Deason. Nerds are hated, and
they were hated.
Okay, so you know that now you're the coolest guy. Nerd, like, hey, dude, I'm such a nerd, I'm going to Comic-Con, meaning I'm into cool stuff like robots and... So,
well, that was just sort of an accident of society that happened. Yeah. That, I mean, that it's like, I'm still into the same stuff I was into when I was a kid. The fact that society has changed doesn't make me any different.
Okay,
like,
so
it's
not like you hijacked the word nerd. It's
no, not at all. I mean, it's not. I mean, the truth of the matter is, we couldn't keep this charade up this long, this much. Like, it would be impossible.
But nerd is the majority, and when I was
no,
a kid.
Nerd is the vocal majority. That's the problem. It's like Twitter, you know? There's a bunch of nerds out there who are very, very vocal. But, like, you see it in things like Scott Pilgrim, for instance. Great movie. Didn't make nearly as much as you thought it would because everyone on Twitter was talking about it. This is going to be great. Everyone loved it on social networking. Then when it came time to release the movie, it did like $8 million.
Well, it is true that a lot of shows that, I mean, not all, but a lot of shows that we think of as being, oh, these are the biggest shows in the social consciousness, do not rate well at all.
If the Nielsen box was Twitter, Firefly would be on its 9th season right now.
Right.
And it would be the biggest show.
But ever. Fred, I think what happened was is just that, you know, I mean, all the stuff that I was, like I said, that I was into when I was a kid that I'm still into, it's just those things became more popular
cool.
than they were.
Nerd means pop culture now, right?
It has definitely broadened, and that irritates me the way that it irritates you and other people, but also it makes me happy that I don't...
But you remember Revenge of Nerds? Let's get them. Let's beat them
well,
up.
Well, yeah, which sucked. I went through
and
that.
Happy Days, you went through it. Okay, are you the model that... You know, like, says, oh, I was awkward as a kid. You know what I mean? How they always do that. You go, I don't believe that.
No, I was afraid. I was afraid to go to school because...
You were into stuff that...
Did you see his new Twitter avatar?
Which someone said, oh, is that a response? This is how it was worded. Obviously a response to Fred Stoller saying, obviously. Like, no, my mom went photo hunting in her garage 2 weeks ago. I'm going to swap out a bunch of pictures that she sent to me that has nothing to do with anything.
That's funny. But I didn't know I had this power.
It was this crazy power. So, you know, like, there were days that I was terrified to go to school because I knew that my name was going to be in announcements because of chess club, and I knew that I was going to get shit for it at lunch, and it just used to fucking terrify me. Terrified me. I was afraid.
You know, actually, I was talking on Mark's thing that maybe I envy the nerds because at least they had the overcompensating thing to become Apple geniuses and, like, Gates and, you know what I mean, and chess, and I was just this schmuck who couldn't do anything. And then Freaks and Geeks, they had camaraderie. They had, we'll show them, we'll overcompensate and do stuff. I was just this invisible misfit. They would tease me and say I was Galaxy Man. I was from the planet Xenops because I was in my own world.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so pathetic that I liked when they would tease me that I didn't feel invisible. You know, it was one guy.
Oh, that's really interesting. I didn't like it.
One guy, Alan Factor, they would chase and beat up every day. And one day he was absent, they chased me, and I liked it. And I was sad when Alan Factor came back. I mean, because I was just invisible, and I relate to, invisible people, movies, things like that. But
Alan Factor sounds like a math cartoon character.
Yeah.
Doesn't that sound like a real person? On Alan Factor.
You know, it was weird because in Sleepaway
Improper
Camp,
fractions.
I got called Galaxy Man, but the three other people got teased more than me, and it was kind of arbitrary because. Yeah, he was a bookwormy guy, But there was one guy, Alan, another Alan. That's a bad name to have.
A lot of Alans.
Andrew Hertenstein, and he wasn't bad looking. But it's almost like cats will decide that's the one I'm going to mate with. You know, it's this arbitrary beating up stuff.
It was. I mean, you know, the toughest part for me was that I rejected all that stuff when I got into my 20s because my childhood was so. Torturous because of the stuff that I was into.
Well, because of chess club and stuff?
Because of chess club and D&D, and I was president of the Latin club, and I brought D&D books to school, and I brought video games to school, and, in the 80s, the consumer electronics, the boom was just happening, and so, not everyone had home computers, and to have a home computer, a lot of people had to build them from Radio Shack, and it wasn't just a thing that everyone had, and now the technology is so pervasive. Now,
so maybe because I'm older, nerd is more techie, I guess. I thought it was just ostracized, but you're saying because of the tech stuff you were ostracized.
To word, and it is completely overused, and admittedly, I'm responsible.
But I'm saying I don't like when people go, dude, I'm a nerd, man. It's like saying, dude, I'm cool.
I think a lot of what it's saying now is that for me, it's like. I feel like I got to take the word back a little bit, but I don't think it means
right.
I don't think it's about what you're into, but as I said in the book, I think it's about how you are into those things. And I think what really defines like the foundation of a nerd, that quality is someone who will obsess on a thing.
I see.
More at the expense of everything else to just understand that thing better than any other human being. And I think that's the quality of a nerd, not whether or not.
Well, I did a part I was cut from, The Change Up. Uh-huh. Do you know Craig Bierko?
I know who he is, of course.
Yeah, he's a good-looking guy. Yeah. He's funny. He's and me and him were sitting on a break with our iPhones just dabbling, and Ryan Reynolds walks by and goes, nerds. So if Craig Bierko, you know what I'm saying, it just means you're just...
The word has lost a lot of meaning. But I think we just lack another... term for this cultural movement that has exploded.
The important question: what were his abs like when he walked?
Ryan Reynolds.
I thought you meant Craig Bierko.
Bierko's good looking too, but Ryan Reynolds is.
He was. I think I didn't know he was going through his breakup with Scarlett Johansson. I'm such a schmuck. I just saw what movie did I see? Marilyn Monroe. In the whole movie, I thought it was Scarlett Johansson, but it was.
Oh, Michelle Williams.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I don't keep up.
You don't have to keep up. There's too much to keep up with now.
You know, it's weird. Like, beautiful people, I won't recognize at the mall, but if it's a weird character actor, like Wayne Knight or something.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, I know exactly in a second who they are. They could be like,
I want to hear about stand-up. I want to hear about, when you started stand-up and your stand-up career, because I certainly was a fan of yours in the 80s. I watched every comedy, everything. And I remember, and I tweeted this at you, and after I tweeted at you, I went and found it on YouTube. Because I'd always remember, I was a
huge... Wow, you remember the Dennis Miller introduction?
I remember it because it was, the 9th Annual Young Comedian Special, which is the one that launched, like, Kinison and Louis Anderson and Rita Rudner and all that.
Remember when Studio 60 stole your bit? Sorry.
What?
Thanks for that.
Yes.
So
yes.
He forgot
Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
They stole your bit?
Well, there was a bit where I played, my part was I played a comedian on a laptop on someone's lap. Where
I loved it.
I was a comedian and doing some hacky joke, and then. What was it? Who was D.L. Ugly?
Yep.
The writers
that Matthew Perry wasn't trying to get out of there wrote this great bit.
The bit was that he did my joke, and someone said, "Stop the, like, NASA, stop the presses." That joke, we have proof. It was from Lenny Gold, who was me at a comedy club. So you just see me, you know, with a fake wall in the background doing the joke. That's, like, Saturday Night Live would really, in this control room, stop it and go, we can't do the bit.
Again, Studio 60, like, you can't, I'm sorry, I mean, yes, Aaron Sorkin's a great writer and all that, and, you know, I mean, like, I would question that not everyone has snappy back-and-forth dialogue that is not a comedian, but whatever. The gravitas that they gave that show was like, you can't just take the West Wing and then set it on SNL.
When Judd Hirsch made that speech in the beginning, I remember when both shows were coming out, everyone, me included, we're saying two shows about behind the scenes at Saturday Night Live. I feel bad. I don't feel bad. What, for Tina Fey? That's going to go in four episodes because this is Aaron Sorkin. Do you remember? They were both coming out.
Both on NBC.
Yeah. Two shows about behind the scenes.
And then 30 Rock, amazing. And then Studio. I mean, it's just the problem.
I liked Studio.
Part of the problem was that they had this, you know, the characters and Matt Perry's character especially, they had this arrogance about how these are the best comedy writers in the business. And then you would see the sketches that they were so precious about, and you were like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I mean, they were like open mic's grade sketches.
I know. Or don't even show them. Like in a Woody Allen movie, what's that movie? With Chaz Palminteri, I don't even know how to say
Chaz Palminteri.
What was the movie? There was a movie whenever there's like he's a gangster making the screenplay better because he knows street stuff.
Oh yeah.
Bullets Over Broadway.
Okay. Yes, with John Cusack, right?
Yeah, and they never show the great thing how he's making the script better. Yeah, they should have done that.
That should have all been in the background and never, ever, ever shown any of these amazing sketches.
Or they could have just hired sketch writers to write the sketches.
I think they did. I think Mark McKinney worked on that show, who's an amazing sketch writer, but I think it just might have gotten Sorkinized a little bit. It was a non-comedian's take on what they think what comedy is like. Like an artificial... Yeah. Like if you tried to feed to a computer and teach it like how to write a joke, it would go, oh, this is how you write a joke. And you're like, oh, computer, that's so you're close. There's just a
so girl computers are always like.
He thought it was more about the drama and the
I guess, but
and the politics.
So the Ninth Annual Young Comedians, which I watched all the Dangerfield specials, and then when it sort of just became Young Comedians and they did. Yours was in like 87, 88?
I'm sorry to interrupt. Didn't they do a black one where it was... So Barry Sobel was the one white one. I don't remember who hosted it. Robert Townsend. I'm sorry.
It might have been Robert Townsend.
Yes, they had those, I think. Remember those ones?
Yours was...
13th, lucky number. And I just... I worked 6 years ago, I worked on Little Man and with Rob Schneider. And I go, there's a curse because two of them are dead. And Rob Schneider's rationalizing, going... Well, it's 17 years ago when they have the True Hollywood Stories.
Right.
The Curse of Hawaii 5-0 or whatever. Some movie from the 40s. They all died. Well, it's...
The Curse of the Year 1900.
Yes.
Everyone from the year 1900 has died. It's a curse! Or just the progression of nature.
But you were saying you remember
Dennis
Milosevic?
But I remember that because he was... and this, you know, this was 87, 88, and this was right...
89.
It was at 89?
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't remember if his first comedy special had aired yet. But he was so fucking arrogant.
Well, when you talk about comment boards, right? I don't remember what they had there, but someone before the IMBD said, great. Oh, no, it was a review, like with these things. Great host, Dan, is blowing them all off the stage and killing. So it's like saying Dennis Mill, which, yeah.
Did you ever see it? Did you see it, Matthew?
Yeah, I saw it.
It's almost unforgivable what he does as a host because he's super, like, arrogant, and then he goes... And it's something to the effect of, and this next guy is
I don't know
just
that
like,
well.
I don't know that well either. They tell me he's
funny. I guess.
Whatever.
It's like,
friends don't. It's like, okay,
it's
so
exactly
you,
like,
you've just told the audience not to give a shit about the comic coming
it's
out.
It's exactly like when Todd Glass did Aspen Comedy Festival and Jeremy Piven announces him.
Oh.
Jeremy Piven.
I love Jeremy Piven stories. I love because I love knowing who the assholes are. And anytime you get a drop, if you work in Canada, they'll tell you because, you know, they're driving people around. And one of them, you know, yeah, and they don't want to say, then you're saying, well, yeah. So him, yeah, I love.
It rhymes with like Claramie Niven.
He's like, this next guy, this next guy, they tell me, all the comedians in the back tell me this guy is like their favorite comic, so he must be pretty good. Ladies and gentlemen, Todd Glass.
That's better than what Dennis Miller did for Fred. Better. Right, by a lot. Dennis Miller blew him off so hard.
I feel a hook coming in for my career. Like, I go on WTF, I put down you guys, I get booked. Maybe I'll get on Dennis Miller's radio show. I'm gonna keep going. Yeah, I see how long I can keep this going.
Man, this next guest I've never met. You introduced me on the 13th annual income. Yeah, whatever.
When I saw the roast of Saget, I think, and Norm MacDonald's on the dais, and... what's her name? Cloris Leachman was saying, Norm, I never met you. And I was on Norm's show and she did a guest spot. So she didn't remember being a guest star on Norm's show and she was roasting him.
She was on a couple episodes of Norm, wasn't she? She was
I
on
think
for a
only
while.
One.
Oh,
all right. But yeah, the 13th annual. Do you know this guy, John Mulrooney? He was I don't know what he's doing now, but there was before Comic Strip Live was taken over by Wayne Cotter.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, Wayne Cotter.
I remember Norm has a funny story. I'm making someone look bad, but like they're on a plane going to Canada, and someone says, "Hey, do you watch Saturday Night Live?" And Wayne goes, "That's our competition, Saturday Night Live." Like people really go, Comic Strip Live, Saturday Night Live. Like we don't talk about, you know. But there was this thing hosted by Dabney Coleman at Aspen on Showtime before what's it called? The Aspen Comedy Festival is big, and he's a guy. I love Dabney Coleman, but you would think of him to host this comedy special,
right?
So John Mulrooney did something really smart. He said, "Let me warm up the crowd." So he's warm. Hey, look at that homo in the front, you know, doing whatever he does, rowdy stuff. And so, hey, and he's killing with, and then when they introduce him, because he you know, did the trick of warming up the show.
Except for that homo in the front.
Yeah,
who was very offended because that is a horrible thing to say to someone.
Well, yeah. It was a different time, well, you know, Chris.
But that was his, yeah.
It was his act.
You know. I want to know what, because it was that special was like you and Warren Thomas and Drake Sather and Rob Schneider.
I have an idea. And this is a big enough podcast where it's sort of like, if I say it, is this like a copyright? I could go, hey, you stole it. I was on Nerdist.
Yes, you could okay. Do that.
Or it's public domain and we can't.
All right. I think there should be like, what happened the 13th? It's Jinx. And because you have the two stars, David Spade and Rob Schneider, you know, what it means and what happens after. You have me, sort of a middle guy, playing delivery guys and clerks on shows. And you have this woman, Jan Karam, who
I remember Jan.
Yeah, still, you know, doing the bookstores and doing the thing. And two people that died tragically. So I think it's a good... All right,
I think they should. I just think someone should chronicle all of the young comedian specials, and they stopped doing them early to mid '90s.
Did you remember? There was one where other alumni hosted. There was one where Belzer, Belzer introduced a New York one.
Yeah, that was the one.
Howie Mandel introduced the Canadian.
And Dana Carvey, too, yes. I think. I think that might have been the one that that Janine Garofalo and Andy Kindler were on, which would have been
No. That was just a regular one.
Was it?
Ray Romano was on it.
Ray Romano and Judd Apatow, yeah.
And there was one, like a reunion one, where, like I said, Belzer hosted. Richard Lewis brought on the L.A. comic. I remember that. Remember Richard Lewis was in one?
Yeah, but I don't remember who. I don't remember the comics.
Smothers Brothers were the host. This is way back. But I guess they stopped doing young comedian specials because it lost the cachet. It all blended in.
It's amazing. When you look at the earlier ones, like the really early ones with, you know, like the Funny Boys with Valerie and
Alan
Schmock.
And first of all, it was done at the worst place to do it. The Catch a Rising Star was a good comedy club, but it's not...
The first handful were just shot in these tiny clubs, and then they got really 80s on everything, and the shows got really you had a big stage.
I went through a phase where I made a little bit of a living just doing, like, you know, Caroline's Comedy Club, Rosie's show. It was like jury duty, Evening at the Improv, where you know, all these cable things like stand-ups, you know, Mario Joyner had one. And I've done three cable shows at that same theater, which is gone now. I did The A-List.
Yeah, Comedy Central.
Yeah, it was done at this place in Santa Monica by the, now it's across the street from where Hooters is, where the Santa Monica Improv used to be.
Mm-hmm.
I did Young Comedian Special.
That's so sad what you just said. Right across from the Hooters where the Santa Monica Improv.
Yeah.
I remember that Santa Monica Improv had like a loft space with a smaller stage.
When did that close, the Santa Monica Improv?
Probably 90.
That was a cool place.
Probably 91 or 2. That was a cool Igby's place. Igby's was in West L.A.
Yeah. I liked the Santa Monica Improv, and I liked the Valley had an improv in a hotel.
Jesus Christ.
And you didn't have that pressure to kill. You could just try out stuff because it wasn't like executives there and NBC guys. But there was one, yeah, the Valley Improv, and it was in some hotel.
What was the sort of mood in the, because you obviously, you were doing stand-up in the sweet spot of the comedy boom.
Well, I'll tell you, basically, I never wanted to, you know, have HBO specials. I just wanted to be a quirky character actor. And now I'd like to be like Steve Buscemi, a little bit of a higher level. Okay, I've done enough schmucky guys who pop in or, you know, the bad date and they blink or whatever. So I never had the
thing.
I got
a show for you, Santa Monica Pier Empire.
All right. What is that?
It's like Boardwalk Empire, but on the West Coast.
Oh, that's not bad. And so I thought I would just, you know, do stand up and get, you know, discovered and be more of an actor. But then I got swept up in the comedy boom of the 80s, which was a false comfort zone because you're filling up your calendar, you know, and I think, hey, I'm on stage. So it was all you had to do to get work was pick up the phone and answer it. There were so many. My friend, a smart guy, said because the baby boomers were now older and there were so many of them. So yeah. They'd go to discos, Jersey every night, $55, few sets a night. So I never was in love with it. I used to love getting the light that I could get off. I mean, I would bomb and I'd always be stretching. I'd have the headline do 45 stretch and I'd come back to the city, do 20, I'm stretching. I go, how did I do the extra 45? But so in one way, it was the adolescence I never had. I'd hang out with Gilbert Gottfried and just, you know, and just try to meet women and stuff. So it had a different feel. It's similar almost to the testosterone kind of Colin Quinn, New York guys.
Right.
When then all of a sudden, you know, I never did stand up going, I want to be cool. But it seems like now all of a sudden became with MTV. And again, that I call it red carpet comedy. Like, yeah, you're a loser. Hey, look what she's wearing.
Yeah.
These guys who you don't know making fun of other losers. Like, you know what I mean? It became cool. And
oh,
that,
I know those specials. I did a handful of those. Like, I love the 80s and I love the 90s and stuff. And then at a certain point, I was like, you know, I feel like I don't want to get stuck just being the guy who comments on
pop culture.
Exactly.
Well, on Best Week Ever, you know, the clips were funnier than the comedians. Like, let me see the thing of Sherry Shepherd saying something stupid about the world is flat. Remember that?
Yeah. Well, but the problem is, you know, the way that they...
And they would just make a face like, yeah, Sherry, you know geography.
I put some of the responsibility on the producers of those because the way that you shoot those, and believe me, I made a lot of dumb jokes on those fucking stupid things, but you go in and you talk for an hour and a half, and then they just go snip, 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 and they...
Right.
And so much in the same way that with a film or anything else,
yeah.
You are so at the mercy of whoever is producing and editing that project, you fucking better hope that they have a good sense of humor, because if not, they're not going to pick the best. I mean, I saw numerous things it that I was like, why'd they pick that?
Right. It became like the joke on the, I love the 90s. Yeah. Mrs. Hathaway, I would do her.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's all like, yeah.
Ginger or Marianne? Yeah,
who would you pick? Hey, the hottest.
Record scratch.
You know, yeah, the hottest woman ever.
There aren't record jukeboxes anymore. Let's do away with the record scratch.
But, so it was fun for a while, but then it became.
You didn't see the Crosley booth at CES. There are record players.
I know there are record players, and they're incredibly expensive, weirdly enough, yeah. But they are. It is not enough of a social phenomenon anymore to use that as the comedy. Like, it is as outmoded as using, like, an Alpenhorn in a sketch to denote that a joke has been told.
Oh, I heard, you know, wah, wah after a thing.
Yeah.
I heard a story that Jim Belushi, there was like, you know, when you, have you done the multi-camera sitcoms?
Yes.
The rehearsals?
Yes.
And then they did a thing. And sometimes, you know, what's those guys that push the The script supervisors with the thing moving on to the next thing.
Yeah.
So they did the thing, and the guy goes, wah, wah. You know, and Belushi yelled at the guy, wouldn't come out, was going to fire him because don't do the wah, wah. That means it sucks.
That means it sucks. Yeah.
But it just means, well, it did. No. And
when you were, so in 89, you did this special, but then that was really kind of nearing the end of the comedy boom, going into the 90s. So did you feel like, the special didn't do anything for you?
Yeah. Well, to be honest, like I said, I would get booked. It was funny. Like I would get booked on some because I did, whatever, Letterman or something, Indianapolis is a headline, and hey, they saw 5 minutes, and then I'm a low-key guy, and then they'd switch me with the middle or be disappointed or, because, I don't work the crowd and do sing-alongs or theme songs of the local stuff.
You didn't ask if there were any birthdays out there?
Well, I would stretch. I would try. After a while, I'd be shameless. But, I kind of they'd have the opening guy just, again, doing the local commercials or... So I would be... The few gigs I got were miserable because I was spoiled. In New York, you could make a living. New Jersey, Long Island, Connecticut, doing 15-minute sets. Not a great living, but I was content to. But then I'd go in L.A. to make a living as a comic. You have to leave L.A. because you don't have that circuit in L.A. So I was spoiled, like I said. I didn't love it after a while to do bookstores and Borders for free and every cool place. I come from it ruins you. You make money from stand up. I almost pretty right away the comedy boom started. So then I'd go on the road and I would do these. I'd have to stretch into an hour. So after the Young Comedian special, I was kind of like staying in these depressing comedy condos. Ugh. And
oh, the worst.
I was telling how the comic from the week before would still be there. And I remember I wake up in the middle of the night and I want to watch TV, and I didn't realize the MC was sleeping on the couch. And I said, you got to get him out of here. And you're in some always an army barracks, always where the army people live. And there's nothing but the CVS, drugstore, a mall to go to. And I didn't love doing an hour. So for after the Young Comedian special, that was 89-90. Then I got a little sitcom that went 4 episodes. So I kind of was trying to get more into that stuff.
What show was that?
No one heard of it. It was called Singer and Sons. It was Harold Gould.
Uh-huh. Yep. I know who he is.
And Esther Roll.
Oh yes.
Esther Roll was at the time the producer was trying to get me fired because I wasn't his idea. And
Esther Roll from Sanford and Son. Yeah.
No, from Good Times.
Oh, was she the mom? And she was the mom in Good Times.
James.
Yes. Yeah.
And,
okay.
And she was telling me stories about Jimmy Walker with Mug, and there was a scene where he had to drink milk, and he was going like this. And she was saying how it was so embarrassing to the black community, and I was trying not to laugh. I go, that sounds funny. She goes, and he would just do this thing like drink the milk, and because of Jimmy Walker, I got into stand up because I never saw any people like me on TV, and he was a skinny, weird-looking guy. And I never saw anyone like that at the time, Then I heard, you do a set at the Improv, you get on the Tonight Show, and then you get a TV show. So I used to fantasize being on the Tonight Show going, yeah, this is my second time doing stand-up.
Did you do the Tonight Show?
I did. It was so anticlimactic. I did it in 89, and there were no guests. It was Doc Severinsen and Yodlers. I'm not saying this. I'm not making it up. And I did it.
So Johnny wasn't there?
Johnny was there, but I didn't get to meet him, and I never said hi to him. It was almost like if I did a thing
That's
here.
That's so insane that
Universal,
you didn't even get to say hi to him.
It's almost like if you pet up the Tonight Show thing, you did, hey, Chris Hardwick, a set, and then you left and you see this. I didn't even see the Tonight Show desk or anything.
Oh, wow.
It didn't really do anything for me, but by then I was really burnt out to stand up. By then it was a time... people would come up to me and say, I saw you on the Tonight Show. And I hadn't at the time. But no, I've never been on it. Yes, you are. I go, okay. So they'd all blended in.
So then when did you start writing for Seinfeld?
I fell into that in 94. And could I plug?
Yeah, plug away. Yeah. No,
Well, at first I was nervous being here because I thought this is like tech show. I don't know why I think you was the tech guy.
I did. I write for a
tech magazine,
right, and I reviewed technology, and so it's a fair assumption.
Okay, you know, I thought it had to go. You said come to G4. I thought it had to be, dude, did you see War of Duty, man? I thought you had to be.
Seriously,
that.
War of Duty, man, was really good though. There was a lot of tech
game
in it.
That should be a game.
War of Duty, man.
You know, it's I'm writing a script, and I know nothing about games, and I'm making up this thing. It's so arbitrary. Like I once thought I had a contact in ski movies. And I they slope down the hill, but all right. Anyway, so you got to what the hell was? Oh yeah, yeah. So I wrote on Seinfeld 1994 to 1995, and I was at my friend Steve Scrove, and he had a surprise birthday party, and Larry David was there, and he was going. I knew him from in New York. He'd always go, "You're a doomed loser." He goes, "Your only shot is if you go blind. You're superficial. You're a Jew like me." You know, and he would say, "Me, you, and Gilbert are the biggest losers." And then one time I bumped into him at the Laugh Factory when Seinfeld was hot. He goes, "I'm still a loser." I go, don't stop that. So I was just kind of schmuck to him, you know, but almost like he gets a kick out of like how pathetic I am. So then he sees me at this thing. He goes, I was saying I don't like spec scripts because you write something you know is not going to get done just to show your writing ability.
Right.
And I never had aspirations to be a sitcom writer. I didn't know about it. I never had the Rob Petrie fantasy. Hey,
this is funny. So far, this is two careers you didn't really have aspirations to getting into that you had success in.
You know, well, if you read the Kindle single, you'll see about the success. So he said, write a spec script. Nothing will happen, but I will read it. He kept saying nothing will happen. And I wasn't going to do it. But then I realized people would kill to have Larry David read their spec script.
Yeah.
Even if he reinforced nothing will happen. Like,
right.
I heard that Jason Alexander, remember Learning Annex?
Yeah.
What made that go away?
It's still around, I thought.
Oh, really? Remember all those papers? You'd get it, and I'd go, why does this guy need the money? Why is he doing a thing? Like
another Dr. Wayne Dyer speech?
Yeah. Like, so people would go to Jason Alexander and inundate him with their script. So I wrote one, and I was on staff, and it was a very, someone in one of the reviews, my Kindle single said, and the DVD extras, you see them palling around. I keep doing this thing to Matt. Hey, that's my thing. But we had fun. Remember when we did the Soup Nazi? But mine is, I kind of didn't fit in. It's not, there was no table. It's like Larry and Jerry are doing everything. They're writing, they're on the set, they're editing, they're casting. So I'm kind of on my own, and everyone's trying to get their own script on. And it was kind of an isolating, it's like, did you ever see the movie My Favorite Year?
Of course, Peter O'Toole. It's a fucking amazing movie.
This is like the opposite of it. The biggest show on TV, but this weird kind of misfit guy. And my Kindle single is called My Seinfeld Year. And this new technology where they have a thing where I didn't know about it, and it's where Stephen King's doing it, Dean Koontz, yeah, where it's more than a magazine, but not quite a book.
Mm-hmm.
And someone told me about it, and it's number one on Kindle singles.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's and it's somewhere between like 10 and 15,000 words or something.
And yeah,
right?
And they were calling me up saying you want it to be 99 cents or $1.99. Like it was up to me. I went, I don't know. I just want people to read what happened to me. And I looked at 99 cents, and it looks like on eBay when like a thing starts, you don't want it.
Right.
So it's not for the money, but people are liking it, and I'm really excited. Yeah, so this is going to be, I feel very, when I say blessed, I guess I'm an atheist, but you're allowed to say that.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, people like Pendulette get so mad if you say, oh, if we have faith, things will work out. And he gets mad. But you can have faith, you know what I'm saying?
In things. It doesn't have to be.
I feel blessed without religion that this is going to be, like I said, Stephen King. Everyone is doing Kindle singles. And you could understand you're at the airport. Writing on Seinfeld, The Adventures. And so, yeah. So
especially if you know, like, hey, this is going to be a fun, quick read. And I'll learn a thing really fast. And it's not fucking George R.R. Martin.
Right. So it's all my behind the scenes of trying to get the story on, how it happens, interactions with cast members, just how I was kind of, you know, Jerry would kind of, like I would go and pitch an idea and they would sit there and they go, why do you always, where did you get those sneakers? Why would you wear that? Or Larry would go, How do you buy a shirt? How does someone like you buy a shirt? I can't picture it. So
I love it.
You know, you remember that? You know, and they'd go, they would just look at me. And I remember the one day we had a table, we sat around, the one day they would try to think of storylines for the year. And I would say something, and they wouldn't even say good or bad. It was almost like, you know, when there's like a crazy guy screaming, and you buy Chris Hardwick, I'll kill you for making, you know, for not being on Not Necessarily the News, you know. And you go, if we acknowledge him, he'll go away. So I would say, how about Jerry and Larry? Then they'll go, da-da-da-da. So yeah, it's just the crazy stuff.
So, I mean, essentially, they were kind of running the show, but they probably had to hire a bunch of writers.
Yeah,
and then
tell stories from their life. And I remember that it was these two young guys right out of Harvard, and never unemployed a second in their life. And they'd say, Fred, we have to make things up. Nothing bad ever happened to me. How could you say, even Chris Hardwick couldn't say nothing bad ever happened to me? You know, and we have to make things up. And I would just things that happened. So I have a gift for you.
What?
I want to, if you want to tell Seinfeld stories.
No, you can talk about whatever you want.
I thought of one thing I've achieved that you haven't.
Yes.
And I'm going to give you the gift. That way, I'm going to rub it in your face.
Yes, please.
This is a dream. One of my dreams came true.
In the apple bag.
To have a thing. Wait. Wait, you have to do it three times.
Let's fix the bike.
An action figure. Were you an action figure nerd?
I had all the Star Wars. Action figures. Oh my god!
I always wanted to have.
Is this
thing
is
with me talking?
Manny. Is this you? This is.
Yeah. See, you have to do it three times.
I like when we work together.
Handy Manny, and I've done animation, but I have no street cred. I could never. I'm a hypocrite. Like I hate Comic-Con. It sucks. But if they had me on a panel, hey, that would be fun. But all the things I've done don't really. Handy Manny is for 3-year-olds. Tools that talk.
This is so nice.
Yeah.
Does he say the same?
No, it alternates.
Let's fix the pipes.
Let's fix our relationships.
You know, so this was my mother got it. She goes, how come it doesn't talk every time you press it? Like, always the negative.
Because when you were designing the toy.
Yeah.
When you, Fred, were designing the toy, you're like, every 3 times.
Yeah, it's too much to go three times to hear her son talk. And she goes, how much do you get paid? And I made up like, I get 5 cents every time someone presses it.
That's
she goes, how do they know?
The technology.
Yeah.
There's a Handy Manny. There's Pat the Hammer. Dusty the Saw.
Tom Kenny does everything in the world, and he's Pat the Hammer.
Tom's great. You must know Tom from forever ago.
Yeah. I got to send you. There was a thing. Now, you're too young to remember this. George Schlatter had a thing called George Schlatter's Laugh Factory or something. He was a guy from Laugh and what
I remember
comedians.
George. Like they branded him on a bunch of stuff in the 80s
they had
for specials.
And stupid music and a comic does a thing. Talk about manipulating Best Week Ever. And they made me laugh, and I wouldn't, but I had to do it like, ha, 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 ha. And then they do a guy doing a joke, cut to me.
Oh. What's the worst thing you've ever seen in the television business?
Oh, that's a good question.
What do you mean?
I mean, like, what's the worst thing that you've seen in the television business, whether behind the scenes or just something where you're like, I just feel gross, and I can't believe this is happening.
Yeah, that was when I did that. Like, you see some hacky joke, and you see me. You know, laughing, bobbing my head up and down.
That's so 80s, too, that idea of, like, everyone's having fun all the time.
Yeah, well, that thing, quick cuts, we love it, and it never worked with comedy.
No.
You know, anyway, they do quick cuts of comics, you know.
Comedy is so terrifyingly hard to shoot. It's a wonder that it's ever done well, because it's a relationship that you have in a room with people, and that's hard to capture if you're not there, and it definitely has been done right. But not the majority of the time.
Yeah, well, when they show audience members or...
Well,
I've been
times,
on things where...
Our show, we have to do that on the Nerdist special on
this.
BBC. We have to... No, we have a...
I thought you were going to cut to people laughing.
You're going to cut to people... Oh, that's
cut
funny.
To that
we totally,
guy, yeah.
totally
But
cut,
it just...
Cut
it just sometimes it's just... It becomes a thing where we went on so long and we have to fit the show into the time it takes. And the only thing you can throw in there is... A reaction shot of
so you can make the cut. But what I see a lot of times in comedy specials, and I don't understand
why it happens is I see a lot. I feel like I see a lot of comedy specials. Maybe this is just me making this up in my head, but they'll cut to the audience and people aren't laughing.
Yes.
And I'll go, why would you cut? I mean, I can understand if you needed an audience, but just get coverage.
Do you remember when Evening at the Improv used to be on five nights a week on
AMS?
And they would cut to, like, show empty seats or... And they always had the thing with Bud Friedman where he'd give you the improv game at the end, and but you always had to give it back. I swear to God, you weren't allowed to keep it.
Oh, that sucks.
And he got mad at me. I wouldn't hug him. Remember you had to do the hug at the thing? Drake Sather passed away. He goes, I don't hug my own father. I'm not going to hug Bud Friedman. You know? five nights a week when comedy was insane.
That's crazy to think of, that there was a time when stand-up comedy was on television.
On multiple channels. Yeah. Multiple channels. Yeah. It was like Evening at the Improv, Caroline's Comedy Hour. The
thing with Rosie, Mario Stand-Up
Spotlight. That was Stand-Up Spotlight.
Mario Joyner, the MTV
VH1,
one.
And then Kamikaze. And
I did a thing where they flew me to London to, there was a thing called Stand-Up America. I forgot what it was called.
No, that sounds familiar. Stand-Up
something
America.
They flew me to London, and I already was at the... Burnt out, but it was a free trip to London, 5,000, and they had me follow Emo Phillips towards the end of the night, and I'm bombing, and I'm up there going, they flew me like, whatever, 6,000, and I'm bombing. They probably think I was doing, here's an imitating Emo Phillips. I doing a poor man's version of him.
No, really? I don't think
No. People, I once was in this, first of all, everyone in the world goes, God, a great idea for a sitcom. It's a comedy club like Cheers. You know, the guys, you do your act and they talk. 7 trillion people have had this genius idea. And they actually tried it on a Showtime thing. Oh, I wish I could get it. The late Warren Thomas was on it. Mm-hmm. The late Richard Jenny was in my thing with me. And they go, it's great. They do their act. You know what the worst gig is? Playing a stand-up comic in a TV movie about a comedy club. I did this thing where Cameron Manheim was a comedian, and it was no one saw it. I forgot what it was on. It's some TV movie, and I thought I had to be an extra because we had to hang out and make it like we're in the background at the bar drinking background. And I'm going, I've been on every show, and I'm just doing background. So then there was a scene where it showed me doing my act, and my character gets picked for the Aspen Comedy Festival. That's the story, who gets into it, and I'm bombing in front of the extras, and I go, this is why I don't miss stand-up. I had to follow this guy, Pablo Mancia,
Pablo Francisco.
Yeah, and he's and spitting.
Was he having a stroke? Because that doesn't sound okay.
No, doesn't he do sound
effects? Yeah, no, he does a lot of sound effects and voices and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and kills. And then I'm up there, and I had to tell the extras, you know, my character passes and gets to Aspen, maybe you should tell the extras to laugh.
Now, yeah, because your jokes, people have to listen to the words.
Yeah, it was subtle and the cadence, yeah.
So what is it, you know, what when you're up in front of a room that you are getting the sense pretty quickly, like, okay, they want to see jumping around and doing sound effects. Like, what's going through your head when you know you have to do, you know, 30 more minutes?
Oh, it's brutal. Sometimes I would do my saver, which was just a joke. Like, oh, man, and that bombed.
What was your saver? You remember?
I don't remember, but it was like a stronger joke. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was don't remember. I had a lot of bomb lines. I used to connect a lot when I'd acknowledge we're not connecting.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't remember those jokes, but yeah, I would just do, I'd say something like, this would be a lot funnier if we were at Denny's, and I was just saying this at the end of a table without the pressure. You know, this is like at Denny's, everyone pulls their chairs and faces me. But if I was at a table, this would, you know, I would just do acknowledge, I would acknowledge we're not acknowledging.
So you're deconstructing the set
And I ended up doing, I remember Jay London was on. He was on.
Let me move this so you could see me over here.
But he was on Last Comic Standing and doing all these bomb jokes, because I guess that's all he would do, and it wasn't working because he wasn't bombing on Last Comic Stand. He goes, yeah, I'm bombing, you hate me. And I'm like, what? But sometimes I'd make that mistake. I would be killing and do one of my jokes, go, yeah, I'm having fun. This reminds me of the night I got stabbed in the head. What are you talking about? We're liking you. So
quit liking it.
Yeah.
Do you don't miss doing stand-up? No.
I mean, it got to a point where I can't hang out at comedy clubs and the green room, you know, at the Ice House where they're all talking. I like people in little spurts. Like, that's why I love the Grove. I bump into people. I have a nice 3-minute interaction. But I missed being a mensch, having, like, a New York meeting. Hey, I'd like to see you. Like, oh, this is where you can see me. You know, mm-hmm. Saturday at the comic strip. I miss filling up the calendar. But I'm trying to find different ways to express myself creatively, like this book, you know, or this Adam.com show I've been doing, or even tweeting. I think, follow me on Twitter. And
Fred_Stoller.
And I'm sorry I got mad at you for thinking you became a snarky guy and doing all your hipster jokes got
so
me
we've
mad.
Resolved this issue.
Yes,
we've
we have.
Officially resolved yes. this
I don't
issue.
Really think there was an issue.
No, no,
in
it was
Fred's
my
head,
issue.
There was.
It was in my
well,
head.
Well, and
in Twitter's head.
In 18 people on Twitter.
Yes.
Yeah, but those 18 people.
But I tried to do jokes, and I noticed that the bigger comedian you are, Jim Gaffigan's great. He does jokes, and mm-hmm. I love him because he's not trying to be the snarky guy and everything. But the real, I think a lot of comedians are afraid to put their jokes because hey, I want to do it in Indianapolis or it'll get stolen.
Right.
So my sales pitch is not saving them.
I love Twitter because it's a nice way to get out because I don't really do quick yeah. jokes. I just like to, you know, but when I have them pop into my head, I tweet them. It's like a nice way to get to cleanse.
I mean, there's really no way. I mean, I feel like. You know, it kind of reminds me of the way my mom is with her car. Like, she won't park near anyone. She's like, I don't want my car to get scratched. I'm like, it's a car. It's going to happen. You know, like, if you put jokes in the world, yes, of course someone could take it. You know, like.
Oh, I used to be afraid of getting my act stolen. I remember when Stephen Wright hit big, I got real neurotic that, oh, someone similar, like, because I was really unique. But then I'd get scared. Yeah, I'm unique. But what if someone just like me makes it, you know, but people had to reassure me you're different than Stephen.
And there
Wright.
Were so many comics back then too. So many. I mean, there's still, you know, I feel like there's definitely
there
been
were as many comics then as there are blogs now.
That's right. It was like sharks. There are more comedians in the world than
humans. Well,
you
know what it's like? It's like sitcoms when I was in the golden age of stand up and the golden age of sitcoms in the 90s. There used to be four sitcoms on a Monday night. Remember Must She TV, Brooke Shields, Can't Hurry Love.
Oh, shit.
You know, there used to be, I used to make a living, yeah, just going from show to show, working on NBC. Yeah. Now it's just Thursdays is sitcoms. And
it's that's not even doing well.
Right.
Even just
right.
that one night.
But I remember that people would say, oh, sitcoms are mediocre or comics are mediocre. But I think it's what it always is. There's 8 trillion sitcoms at the time, 8 trillion comedians, only about 15 are going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest are going to, you know, make those faces like, yeah.
Now, a trillion is a million, million, million.
I think it means a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying about
yes.
how when people say they're not that good, there was at any stage in time of history, there were probably in every era only about 10 phenomenally great stand-ups, the 70s, you know what I
right.
mean?
Right, yeah.
And there's just so much, it's so much more accessible, looks like, yeah.
Boy, that would have been a fun time to be a stand-up, I think, the late 70s. When
I started in 78.
Yeah, where were you going
in
up?
In the improv, and in the New York City comedy clubs, it was prestigious to be an MC.
Yeah.
It was, then all of a sudden the road, that's the
low end, yeah.
But I remember this guy, Barry Diamond, who I thought should have made it bigger. He would MC. Do you know who he is?
I don't know
he
him.
He was in Bachelor Party.
Which guy?
Check
which
him
one?
Out. He was like, all right, we'll have guns and...
Was he bald guy?
No. He may be bald. He's a good-looking guy.
Oh, okay.
Blackish hair. But he was more, we'll have guns and hookers and at the Bachelor Party.
Okay.
And...
Where it just looked like everyone was doing cocaine.
Right, right.
Right.
Well,
Jimmy Brogan used to be
an
MC.
Yeah, I know Jimmy Brogan.
Yeah, so it was Robert Wall, with the big guy. So it was prestigious to be an MC. So yeah, I when I passed, Robert Wall said, go see the guy in the front. And that was Chris Albrecht, used to run the improv, who became the head of HBO for a while, a long time. So yeah, I think it was, the late 70s, it was more like, you know, Jerry Seinfeld, Larry Miller, more like, yeah, a lot of, like the... Kind of
this is as fascinating to me as it would be to talk to an Apollo astronaut. Just the era.
It's a. I mean,
Dennis Wolfberg. Do you remember him?
I remember Dennis Wolfberg used to talk like this all the time.
Gilbert Gottfried.
She said, "Happy Chaka Khan to me. Can you believe it?"
Yeah, and we'd go. I'd go from the strip to catch, and Belzer would go up there for like an hour on coke. And I remember, I remember Robin Williams was filming Moscow and the Hudson, and he would film all day, then come to a set at night. And I go, "Why? If you're in a movie, just I'd want to get rest. I'd be worried about my early call time." But he would go up there, Robin Williams, and. And in Catch, they used to have singers. Like every third act was a singer for some reason. They would never do that now.
That's how you know. That's how you know if you have the weird stand-up gene. Because I would hear those stories about Louis C.K. He'd write, you know, he'd write on Conan, and then sneak out to do again, sets, and then go back.
I never had that in me. No, like if I had that gig, I wrote on a show you probably never heard of called Nightlife with David Brenner.
I don't know if I remember
Billy
that one.
Preston was the sidekick. Okay. I'll send you clips. And I was supposed to be the Chris Elliott of the show. And then all the other writers were pissed off that, why isn't Fred writing topical jokes? Well, I don't know how. I remember the big topical joke was Springsteen had some big triple album selling a lot in Madonna. Yeah, Springsteen has more money than God. And they really resented me because the head writer wanted to be on it. And oh, no. I say things now. People on Twitter and Facebook. In 30 years of doing this, I never had people pissed off till Twitter. And you'll
or
say
at least,
something.
At least you didn't hear about it.
Exactly. Or they didn't hear what they didn't hear my grumbling or misinterpret it.
Right.
I mean,
I still think it's, you know, it's fascinating to me that there were, you know, there was a period of time where people embraced privacy, embraced it, like 50s, 60s, 70s, you didn't talk about stuff. I mean, like, you know, people...
It's more and more precious to me.
Well, you know what,
and now it's just like everyone expects everything's just all
I remember Norm Macdonald bumped into, who just died, sadly, Robert Schimmel. Mm-hmm. And he goes, he comes up, he goes, yeah, I have cancer and this and that. He goes, why is he opening up? I think Howard Stern opened this floodgate where you became really confessional. Yeah, you know, I once was with a guy, you know, where it became almost like getting on Stern, you'd be brought back more if you talked about masturbating and, you know, in the church.
And maybe not accidentally, that was around the same time that reality television, you know, like in that time in the 90s. And I think, you know, a lot of it, I think, was just... each kind of decade is a reaction to the previous one, and I think the 80s was so much of that fake George Schlatter stuff that people, you know, that's why you saw, you know, glam metal get taken apart and replaced with grunge, and, you know, like reality television starting to replace engineered sitcoms and Howard Stern replacing the classic DJ, you know.
Well, you know what's another thing?
It was across all forms of media.
Well, you know what's another thing? Comedy took another turn where the storytelling or... If you talk about being on antidepressants or being molested by your uncle, if it's funny, it's funny. And it's always funny, but no. but they go, they're so brave. A lot of them, they'll be ballsy. Yeah, you know, I once, had oral sex with a guy. And people, like, sit up. Just because you're confessing doesn't make it the most, you know, ballsy thing. But then there was the era of comedy where people like Kathy Griffin, who didn't go through the traditional comedy club thing, there became this Largo thing where she's funny. I don't like her. I have bitter stories to tell about her. I think... You know, but...
One bitter story.
You want to hear a bitter story?
Yes. One bitter story.
Okay. Well, I had one date with her where we sort of messed around, and I'm not bragging because she's done it. Just pick anyone out there. You know, so I've worked with her. I've done stuff with, you know, not. I don't mean the sexual. You know, so one time there was a thing where Doritos or something wanted me to be in a commercial and play her boyfriend. So my agent calls me up and says... Yeah, they wanted you, but Kathy wanted a more hunky boyfriend.
So
to have Fred Stoller in a commercial as your boyfriend, a guy you know, give me a gig, put me in a commercial, you know. And I was on Suddenly Susan. I was ahead of my time. I played a low key gay guy, and with another gay guy before the onslaught of all that stuff. And I remember Kathy kept looking at me, going, "You're not holding hands. You're homophobic." With my guy, geez. Like, Kathy, worry about the thing, not if I'm holding, you know, the guy's hand. So, but no, she's, You know how people get away with stuff? Someone's kind of an asshole where they go, but that's been Kathy. You ever notice that? Like, if you're open about your, like her show, she's very open about trying to get things for free. And so if you're open about it, you can be anything.
It's not only open, but being unapologetic about things too, I find. If someone, I mean, I'm very apologetic about things because I don't like people to feel bad.
Me too.
Right. I hate it when people feel bad, and I hate if I'm responsible for that. So if someone gets upset, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I only don't care if Kathy Griffin's upset. Everyone I apologize like a bastard to.
But there are some people out there, it's sort of like I saw a t-shirt in around Silver Lake the other day or something, and it just said something like, Yeah, I'm a bitch, so what? It was like that. And it's like, oh, okay, so it's okay to be an asshole
if
as long
you're
like,
open about it.
Yeah, I'm an asshole.
Yeah, they always go, that's for being Kathy, yeah. So they had that, yeah, but I think you had a whole, that's a good point about the confessional stuff, and people play it up, yeah, because...
I'm sorry Kathy did it to you. She was always nice to me, but I didn't really work with her a lot, so I don't know.
No, I'm just being an idiot.
Not at all. You're entitled to have your. You're entitled to
look. The Kathy story didn't
get
me.
He's trying to book an episode of the D-List. That's what's happening right now.
You know, in this business, diplomacy doesn't always get you far. You know, you piss someone off, and they. You know, I remember Fred Wolf told me that he kind of was mad at Paul Prevenza about something and told him off. Then he ended up being his co-host on, remember that show?
I remember that show,
Only.
Yeah, Comics Only. And Fred was the only guy in the audience, right? Or was he, there was only one guy.
No, that's Alan
Havey. No, that was Alan Havey.
Night after night.
But,
Prevenza
it was Comics.
Comics Only. I'm going to send you, one of my big regrets in stand-up is Sam Kennison wanted me to be on his Outlaw tour. He thought it'd be funny because I did those Thrill Seeker jokes. I drank milk that expired yesterday, and he thought it was funny, me being a rebel. And he you know, remember he had the Outlaws of Comedy tour?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I said, I don't know if I want to go a whole month in Vegas because it might be fun, but then, you know, more whore. I know whores might have been fun if they were free, but you know what I'm saying? Yep. It might have gotten old.
I don't think Vegas is a really fun place to perform.
It's not. If you don't gamble, which I don't.
And especially because, you know, those audiences there, they just... people go into Vegas mode, which is the worst mode. It's the worst setting of humanity. That's our worst setting is Vegas mode, where people are like, I'm supposed to get everything for the way I want it right now. You didn't tell 10 jokes in a second. Fuck you.
Well, speaking of Vegas, I did a college at Vegas, right? And when I actually some great experiences with colleges, because I do some Catholic place and it in North Chapel or something, and they're too young to drink. They're starved for entertainment because they can't drink. And if it's they're really appreciative. I found a lot of colleges. If it's not in a city, if it's not, you know what I mean? Some bad ones are in rec rooms, but, you know, but some of my best ones were Catholic. But then when I did Vegas, they could give a shit. They were sort of looking because they're used to seeing entertainment every second. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when I did the UNLV, I opened for Margaret Cho, I remember. And, yeah, she's another one like Kathy, didn't really go up the different ranks of the kind of...
Yeah.
Yeah, the Largo stuff.
Well, maybe you'll come to do a set just for fun at Meltdown sometime, just for the fuck of it.
No pressure. What's that like?
It's fun. It's just like the crowds are really nice, and it's, you know, just a bunch of nerdy kids watching a comedy show in a comic book store. And
I hear Dan Harmon does stuff there.
Dan does a monthly show called Harmontown. Yeah.
And he tells Chevy Chase stories, or I should say, I think he used a euphemism.
Tell those backstage.
Oh, I'd love to hear that.
But I'd love to.
I appreciate
that
so much.
It'd be fun to have you on. And thanks for, and again, I you know, I'm sorry that all this whole thing on Twitter got weird.
Two times I bumped into you, you couldn't have been nicer. I can't remember the other one, but actually, are we wrapping? Can I tell one last thing about
you?
Please,
yeah, go on.
I was supposed to be on the show that you ended up hosting. I did all these demos of Smash. What was it called?
Trashed.
And
that was my first job.
I was the trasher, and I remember wearing some demented thing, and doing the demo for Doug
Herzog was at MTV at the time.
And then all of a sudden, I guess one of the Higgins guys took it over and he put his friends in it. But yeah, I was supposed to. The original trash guy was this guy, Phil Buckman, who's done very well.
I know who Phil is.
He did the voice of Carl's Jr.
Yes.
It always goes on you.
That's. my least favorite thing Phil's ever done.
Why is it appealing? Like Dennis Rodman having things
I never understood that rationale for the Carl's Jr.'s ads.
That it goes all over
if
you.
It doesn't
I
get
that.
All over the place. Like, but so diarrhea is awesome because it gets all over the place.
Kind
like,
of
that's
is.
Not the.
It kind of is.
I never thought about it that way.
Feels so good.
Oh my god, I take it all back, Matt.
But I did meet you
gross,
twice.
Oh, gross, Matt. Feels so good.
What? I don't understand.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, but I met you twice, and Weird Al. That guy's got a career. I mean, he appeals
to. That guy does have a career.
To kids were there, people my age, your age, and it's so great because it's because you feel just as energized as if you were, you know. Listening to the artist that does it, Nirvana, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're seeing their Nirvana, but you're listening to kick-ass music.
He puts on such that's an amazing so show.
Oh, the change in the costumes.
Yes, and it always fascinates me. I mean, listen, I always have this struggle with comedy where it's like, you know, my brain, the first place my brain goes is right to dicks and vaginas. And I get so frustrated that I love seeing someone like Al or Gaffigan or like someone who really doesn't ever default to any of that, you know, and they're just funny. Like, I really respect it. I really respect it.
Well, Louis C.K. goes dirty, but why I love his show is he's not annoying like Curve. But he's not the snarky, you know, hey, you're a loser guy. It's so
I think it's just, you know, I think guys like Louis and Marin and, you know, guys like that, what's fun to watch about them is not just that they're funny, but you really feel like, oh, they're actually saying an honest thing that is a real thing, that it's not.
They're not trying to be a cool person.
No, but it's a very difficult line to
walk.
Like
Norm MacDonald is funniest guy, but he's not trying to be cool. You know what I mean?
He just tell, yeah.
Yeah, he's just, yeah.
But those guys, you know, they have a way. Because, you know, people who try to do that who aren't as, who just don't have as much experience or aren't as funny, then it just turns into, like, therapy. And you're now I'm just watching a one-man show.
But like I said, when they talk about, you know, molestation or antidepressants, just to show they're ballsy for bringing the subject up.
And that's where I think a lot of people who are probably trying to copy what guys like Louis and Marin do.
Exactly.
It's like, no, it's not just about you fucking doing therapy on stage.
Or telling that you were shitting and you're open.
Yeah, exactly. It's not that. It's just like, that's the experience that Louis has, or that's the experience that Mark has.
A lot of stuff on Twitter is like that, where someone will be like, ironically lowbrow, woke up, masturbated, what do I do next? You know what I mean? No, you're just gonna use that choice. She's like, but you know what I'm saying?
Hashtag masturbate again.
You know what I mean? They do that kind of, yeah.
Yeah, I know. It comes from the place of, well, I have to be funny, and in absence of anything else that there's funny, well, I can always just default to that. I mean, it is, you know, I am so not above a cheap laugh, and I beat myself up for it all the time, but at least, you know.
I like what you said in your book about, I used to not write so much. I was paralyzed with perfectionism. And then just write, like a good exercise is write a script that sucks just to write it. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there are bands that I've heard that the way that they get over, I think I might have said this in the book, the way that they get over writer's block is to purposely write the hackiest song they can think of, like the song that they would never write. But just because they have their own certain filters, it ends up actually
actually
comes. It's just a way to unstick the cogs.
It's good. I really liked it.
Well, I'm glad you came on the show. This is a super fucking fun episode of the show.
Glad we buried the hatchet.
Yeah,
I know. We put that
again, Myra. God, Fred, it's Myra.
That's okay. He said, "Curve your enthusiasm too."
What'd I say?
Curve your enthusiasm. And INBB.
No, I always like Matt. Again, I had this irrational abandonment thing, but I'm glad you texted me. You know, like that he became.
I was just so confused by it because I feel like I'd felt like I'd never been.
No, please never again. It's
Fred,
like,
and I just like
I keep thinking Brad is snubbing me. The other Apple guys.
We need a show. You need the F list, the Fred Stoller list.
Well, that's another problem I have with Kathy. She's not a D-lister. She has a big house. I'm a D-lister. I'm a guy, you know. Yeah, live in an apartment, and you know, but it's all good.
Okay, so tell us where to get your single again.
Please, on you know, the Amazon.
Go to Amazon's Kindle page. Go to Kindle Singles. And it's My Seinfeld Year by Fred Stoller.
And I heard you don't necessarily have to have a Kindle. You get the free app for your iPhone.
Yeah, you get the Kindle app
on
for the
iPad,
iPhone too.
Whatever. And the also his The Gate Show. Watch The Gate Show. which is Fred's
on Adam.
Yep.
Yeah, excellent. Or just put my name in on it'll be on YouTube. So thank you.
Thanks, guys.
I enjoyed this.
Oh, by the way, Jonah wasn't here.
Yeah.
Because we really have a problem.
In case you didn't hear someone telling Matt to shut the fuck up.
Because me and Joe, we have such an issue, me and Jonah, that.
Oh, my God. Oh, you're starting it again. No, no.
No.
Okay. Yeah, Jonah's shooting for the soup today, so
Jonah
he couldn't be here.
Jonah was such a dick that time. Wow.
What?
No, I don't know.
Now you're starting shit with Jonah. Jonah, did you hear what they said about you in the Nerdist podcast? Wait, I'm on the Nerdist. What the fuck?
Well, maybe I will get a signed.
Oh, well, of course.
Oh, enjoy your burrito.
Oh, yeah, that part.
What?
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this, perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients, popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.